Now, this is weird. I have done some freaky shit.
Hey, boys, I have a headache.
That makes absolutely no goddamn sense whatsoever.
Movies in the Buff.
Hey, hey, welcome back to Movies in the Buff, where we strip down, objectify, and thoroughly violate your favorite movies. Here's your team of debauchery, Carl and lovely Lisa.
Are we going to hell?
Yep.
I knew it!
I gotta go.
Oh, and in case you didn't know this, this week...
Because you probably don't.
At very least, you've never heard of this movie, I guarantee you. But if you listen to last week's episode, you do know that this week we are buffing The Babysitters. Thank God. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Lost my
what are you sure The Babysitters aren't buffing us?
I'm tomato, tomato, chicken or the egg.
Okay.
Bullshit or bullshit, you know?
The rooster.
The rooster always comes first. When honors high school student Shirley, played by Catherine Watterson, becomes romantically entangled with Michael, played by John Leguizamo, the married father of one of her babysitting clients, she quickly realizes the affair's potential for turning a profit. My God, does it. The enterprising Shirley's affair... The enterprising Shirley soon sets up teenage prostitution ring made of school chums who she matches up with Michael's bored married friends, all under the guise of babysitting. And now, before we go into the scene-by-scene roundtable on this... And before we do the likes or dislikes segment, I just want to point out to my other Team of Debauchery members, last week I made a statement that this movie sounds like a book that all three of us have read, written by Richard Bissell. It's called Call Girl Cheerleaders. And I am here to tell you, it is very, 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 very similar.
The difference is they weren't babysitting.
It's
got enough differences similar, to be a different story, but at
It's a very different story and a very different ending. It has some small similarities, but not nearly as many as could.
There's enough similarities there that it makes me think that the director definitely read that book.
Or maybe the writer, yeah.
Yeah. Well, the writer is the director, bro.
Oh, that's true, it is.
Which, for the record, written and directed by...
David Ross.
Thank you. I couldn't get to my IMDb page fast enough. David Ross. This is the only thing he's ever directed, and he's only written two movies total. So,
yep, The Babysitters and The Woods.
Yeah. Both of which this girl, what is her name? Lauren Burkle played in, just for the record. Okay, and like or dislike segment. Lisa, did this movie make you wet or frigid?
Parts of it made me very wet. Parts of it... frigid. But, again, I was pleasantly surprised. However, there were scenes that I was slightly disappointed with.
I understand that. So, Carl, does this movie make you hard or flaccid?
Overall, I'm gonna give it about 3/4 of a chubby. I was pleasantly surprised by this movie, and at the same time, slightly disappointed in this movie.
Okay, and just out of curiosity, a question to the both of y'all. After this, will y'all be, you know, pushing to get a babysitter anytime soon? Because I'm pretty sure that can satisfy both of you.
We will never answer that question for the fact that we might incriminate ourselves.
Amen.
Plead the fifth of Jack, huh?
Yep.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Jack is my friend.
Anyways, and just for the record, I am, I was a little thrown off by this movie. I was expecting to go in watching some independent, low-budget crap, because I've seen John Leguizamo do a lot of that, and it's unfortunate because he is a very good actor. So it definitely gets high ratings because it actually turned out to be good, and that made it seem better than what it was to me. Because I was expecting it to be way down here, and it turned out way up here, you know? And it made it look higher because I'm looking at it from down low.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I mean, just to be absolutely fair with this, I'm going to have to say this gave me about a half staff. And I am definitely knocking off points for, you know, DOP, director of photography.
Yeah, there was... I've got to say, overall, this was a really awesome story. He needed somebody who was less of an artsy director for it.
Exactly.
And it's got, it has way too much of that art student film feel that it really doesn't need.
I absolutely agree. It was like a film student did this movie.
And he probably is, but that's beside the point. It's not so much that it feels like a film student did this movie. It feels like somebody was trying to take this script and shoot an art movie.
If you've never ever seen it, there is a French film. Now it is subtitles. You'll have to read the movie, but it's called The Pornographer.
Mm-hmm.
And the entire concept of the film is this man who makes pornography. And I will warn you, there are some very, very, very explicit scenes in it. I mean, full on penetration in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a feature film in France. And what it is this man who does pornography goes on to try to become an artist.
Mm-hmm.
And he does some really weird things, like trying to show love in his scenes, which is kind of a cool concept, but not going into my pornography preferences. But beyond that, this movie, like I said, it needed a different DOP. It needed a better costuming department.
And I was okay with that.
See, I ran into the problem of with the costumes and everything else. It took me forever before I realized that this wasn't a period piece in the 70s.
No. I never got that feel.
A lot of Shirley's jeans looked like they would be 70s.
See, a lot
never got that feel from it.
Walking around braless thing, the whole weird mustaches, especially in the opening scene.
Oh, God, Jerry's mustache, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That ran off from, that escaped from 1970, I'll grant you that one.
But I had the feel this was a period piece. I literally did not realize this was a modern piece until I saw a laptop.
Yeah.
And part of that's my fault, I wasn't paying attention to the cars, which I normally would. But moving into our roundtable, since we're already kind of starting here, 2 seconds in and there's already tits.
Yeah.
I'm
there's also a slow, aimless walk and a voiceover.
Yeah. I'm not really sure how I feel about that, because I loved the voiceover. We're not going to go into what it says, but I loved the voiceover.
Mm-hmm.
And, but at the same time, you know how I am about that.
Yeah, and it fit in this movie.
It fit, and they did something that I absolutely, absolutely hate in movies.
Flashback?
The whole movie is a flashback, practically. Well, let's go back to where this started. You know, like, for example, American Beauty. Now, I love the movie, but I hated that entire concept.
Yeah.
American Beauty wasn't.
Yes, it was. At the very beginning, he says...
it starts at the very end for a few seconds.
Yeah, he says, this is the day I die, but maybe I should take you back to the beginning. And then it does the same thing. The whole movie's a flashback.
Well, and then again, Fallen, the entire movie is a flashback, and that worked really well, too.
That's true. It sometimes does work.
Well, in some movies it does work, but in American Beauty, in this one, I don't think it worked.
And maybe it's just my personal preference. I don't like knowing how it's going to end.
Well, this wasn't – you got no feel for how it was going to end. You knew it was giving you a taste of where it was going so that you would – to help draw you into it. Because without that, if you had never heard of this movie and just sat down and saw it in a theater, and it started without that whole opening scene, you probably would not get drawn into it nearly as fast as you did.
I don't disagree with you at all. And a lot of the problem with this movie is they took, once again, a good story, but it had such bad defects to the film that they literally had to sell sex in it.
At least at the beginning, it felt like the movie was shot in slow motion.
Yeah.
And it bugged the piss out of me enough that I made a note about it.
And it was so quiet. The whole thing was just so, even when it was very extreme, up until the very last scene, that one was actually a little loud, but up until that scene, the whole thing was just so quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And then you, moving on into the next scene, you have the "This is your future" speech that I really hate. I don't know how many of those I heard back in high school.
Yeah.
And, oh.
Thank God I got that I forgot all of them?
That note is not applicable. At first I thought that John Leguizamo was going to be our teacher, so I put a note in that said Professor Tybalt.
No. But I do have to point out something that you see right after this scene that I really got. I didn't realize how important it was going to be until we got towards the end of the movie, and that's her OCD bedroom.
Yes. Yeah, and
I even noticed that. In fact, I told you about it, Carl.
Well, yeah, I made the note about the OCD bedroom, but I didn't realize it was important until towards the end of the movie when you see her bedroom again and it's completely trashed.
Yeah.
And it looks like a normal teenager's bedroom.
Point made in the fact on IMDb about how she is OCD.
Oh, really?
OCD.
Yeah.
It's in the frequently asked questions. But that's been, and there, it's a general discussion throughout the reviews on Netflix also that she is OCD and the extent of that illness and how that affected her decisions in the movie. So seriously, people, if you've not read Netflix reviews, sometimes there's a lot of good information off of them.
Oh, it's a frequently asked question. It says, do you think Shirley, not the actress? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, of course she's OCD. She actually explains it to John Leguizamo.
Does she?
In the first quarter of the film.
The
yeah, it's right before they have their affair when he takes her to get her something to eat.
Oh, right.
And she's explaining the thing with the ketchup with the ketchup in the sugar packets and stuff.
That did not click for me. I noticed everything else about her OCD. That part did not click for me. I don't know why. And
yeah, it was,
I'm pretty tired.
It was fun trying to watch
when we were in the,
explain it.
Mm-hmm. When we were in the bedroom and you see it, how she has everything. I looked at Carl and said, and you call me OCD. Good Lord.
Now, just for the record, after the bedroom and all that, I just want to point out, John Leguizamo's kid is awesome.
Yeah.
Like
the son?
The kid, yeah.
Yeah.
The one, when they're walking off, is like fucking losers.
Yeah.
Loved it. Loved it. But then moving on, you have dinner with the asshole. I really hated this character. Everything about him.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it pissed me off so bad at the end when he's, you know, the savior type.
Yeah.
It just pissed me off. It was like, couldn't it have been anybody else in this position? No pun intended.
Oh, yeah.
But...
And I think that was... Yeah, I think he was there for you to hate. I mean, he was there to be prototypical, sleazy, hipster dude.
I agree 100% with you. I also want to push that a little bit further. I think, and once again, this is like first-time director bullshit stuff that we see all the time. And if I ever direct a movie, do not let me do this crap. Mm-hmm. But there's this whole, like, a moral to every character. And you see them go from A to B and all that. And even this background asshole that nobody actually gives a shit about through the whole movie has this getting from point A to point B in this movie.
Yeah,
and I think that was the point of having him be the savior at the end, trying to wrap that story up too with everything else. And you'll see it with every character in this movie. There's this weird background story that's completely unnecessary.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's called character development, and it is necessary.
But I disagree. It's overly done.
They went overboard with the character development, is what you're saying, Ross.
Yeah, I mean, we need the asshole. He doesn't have to learn something by the end of the movie. I don't care about him.
Yeah, and it's a holdover from writing, and it's an effort to make characters three-dimensional, because a lot of early writers, their problems are is that none of their characters are three-dimensional, and they're all two-dimensional characters, and yeah, every character in this movie is three-dimensional,
and that's excellent, and it's excellent in theory. I mean, just like communism, it's great in theory. It works really, really well in books.
I think it could have worked in this film with a better director. I think that most of the problems I have with this movie at all have to do with its direction. I didn't have a problem with the character development of all the characters because they all fed off of each other.
Kind of. And in the same aspect, I mean, I'm going to make my own counterpoint here, but look at a Jonathan Frakes movie. So, you know, where every character has this weird backstory to it, even if it's just for a little bit. But, and he does it well, so, I mean, you've got a point, it can work, but 99% of the time, basic Jane and Joe moviegoer don't give a shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But anyway, then you see the marriage troubles in the train yard, where he's trying to get her to have a little fun, and we gotta get home, and we gotta get home. And God help me, I've watched at least 3 episodes of Sex and the City, so I remember this chick from that. I remember her from House, where she had Munchausen's.
Yeah.
And Cushing's. And so,
Wasn't she... She wasn't the one that tried to poison her husband with gold, was she?
No, that was actually...
No, she was the one who... Her mother was in the hospital so much, she developed a need to be in the hospital herself.
Yeah.
The girl you're thinking of is the wife from The Punisher.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay, so moving on. The wife's a bitch. And I'm sorry, I realize that they tried to do the whole redeeming thing with her throughout the movie. And what he was doing to her, I don't agree with. But at the same time, I just could not stand this chick's personality through the whole movie. And that's just a personal bias of mine.
Yeah.
It's not, I mean, it was a well-written and well-developed character. I just could not stand her.
Is it?
Hmm? Are you okay, Carl?
Yeah, sorry. That's what I thought.
Huh.
One of the... boys in this movie is Hayden Panettiere's little brother.
Ah, nice stuff, nice stuff. Good to know.
Yeah, it's Mikey. It's one of the. It's one of John Leguizamo's kids.
Nice.
Not the. I don't think it's the one. No, it's not the one you're. Not the one you liked.
Okay. Well, that's good news.
Getting back to the movie, I agree with you about his wife. I did not like her at all throughout the entire movie. The only scene that I actually laughed that had her in it was the second dinner she went to with her
husband. Oh,
yeah. Where she mimed with the knife.
I actually did laugh about that one, too.
Yeah, I like that.
But scene by scene, we've got the diner, which we've already explained. And then you have sexing her up in a train yard, or as I like to call it, you want to see something cool? Like my penis? Seriously, this is the worst line I've ever heard, and it coming from John Leguizamo to a 16-year-old is even worse.
Yeah, she was 17, maybe.
I'm having flashbacks of R. Kelly, but that's beside the point.
Yeah.
All I needed was a place to pee. I couldn't wait till her sweet 16. Oh, wait. okay, so that's, you know, he pays her off after he has sex with her. Basically, because he doesn't know what else to do, so he treats her like a prostitute. And, well, let's face it, pure and simple fact, he brought on his own demise from this point forward.
Yeah.
He did.
Yeah.
He was the architect of his own demise.
Yeah, at that point, when he paid her, it's like, okay, yeah, she's going to treat this like prostitution and get money for it.
Yeah. And, I did actually like writing trouble on the stack of 20s. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and I love it when she's in the little dessert shop thing, coffee shop, whatever it is they're in.
Mm-hmm.
And she walks out to her and she's like, does Thursday work? The next scene, my only thought was, Thursday worked?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that was great.
Yeah.
But then she starts up the service with her best friend and all that. And I don't think they were actually
best friends. Give me my 20%.
Yeah. Oh, my God. That was ridiculous.
Look.
It was even worse where he looks at her, he's like, what's your favorite subject? And she basically, her head just goes straight down. It's like, oh, that's your favorite subject.
Yeah.
And
that's kind of a duh.
I was once again flashing back to a different movie. I was flashing back to Disturbing Behavior, where he looks at her and she says, self-mutilate this fluid boy.
Hmm.
In the very opening scene. Anyway, that's what I flash back to. What's your favorite subject? Are we going to hell? We covered that in y'all's intro.
Yeah.
And the party.
Oh, no. Before the party, my favorite scene, one of my favorite scenes, when John Leguizamo visits her at her house, and her dad comes in and starts trying to talk with her about boys while he's hiding behind the bed.
That was...
Was it behind the bed or under the bed?
I think he was behind the bed.
I thought he was under.
He went behind the bed and he might have rolled under it, but.
I think so. Anyway, because I thought he stuck his head out from underneath later on.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Yeah, that's.
Anyway, my thought was, though, that I'd skipped over the bitch giving me my 20 scene, which was great when she looks at it. I was thinking maybe you could give me some of it since, you know, I set it up.
And again, character development. Because think about how that progresses.
And that makes sense. This is the main character. I want to see this development, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Don't give a damn about the asshole in the background. Not every extra needs its own storyline.
Yeah.
But, I know, I'm taking it to extremes, but you get my point, right?
Well, he's not an extra. He's a minor character, yes, but he's not an extra. The extras were, you know, most of the other guys.
I know, I'm exaggerating it, but...
He's the male lead's best friend.
Yeah. I still think he's the asshole in the back through the movie. Or at least if you're going to develop his character, make him more of a prominent role.
Yeah.
You know?
I couldn't have stood him in a more prominent role.
I really couldn't have either, but...
Yeah, I agree.
He was too much of an asshole, and that... He got just exactly as much screen time as he needed.
Actually, I think he got too much screen time.
Yeah, maybe one or two shots too many, but still.
But anyway, moving on to the party.
Of course, Rod's favorite scene.
No, not that party. With all the teenagers.
Yeah, the teenager party.
Yeah. My first thought about this party, like, I was completely just glossing over this whole scene until she says, "Who's the hoe?"
Yeah.
And I was like, that was... Duh. That was great. Becky was such a good idea for that one. This is where, in my mind, everything started going downhill for these girls, by the way.
Oh, when the two of them branched out?
Yeah. The very second they brought her on was when things started going downhill.
Yeah. No, it wasn't her that started them going downhill. It was her sister.
Yeah, but Becky brought her sister in.
That's true.
So this was where it started. And then it just spiraled and snowballed from there. And it got worse and worse fast.
Yeah. And that was one of the problems that I had with this movie, is all these stories go bad the same way.
Mm-hmm. 100% agree with you.
Yeah.
And the fact that the whole linchpin was on a character that you didn't even meet till halfway through the movie...
You met her at the beginning.
Nadine?
Yeah.
Okay.
They were talking to or about her in the first scene with the SATs.
Maybe that was it, yeah. But that was the only time you see her until now.
Yeah, you see her, she's kind of background until she gets brought in.
Fair enough. But then you have the dumbass kid who's trying to be chivalrous with the girl, not realizing that he's, you know, literally courting a prostitute.
Yeah.
Would you have realized it
at that point?
Probably not. But you know she's just laughing at him inside.
Not really. She just doesn't feel any attraction to him, which was part of the problem that got this all started.
Yeah.
I mean, you saw the scene where they're in the diner, and he's asking her, you know, if she has a boyfriend or not. And she turns around and looks, and the guys are sitting over there in a booth being stupid.
And that, I wasn't sure that they were... the same guys that are like partying all that. I couldn't tell for sure.
Yeah, that's them.
Okay. What were you going to say, Lisa?
Is it possible to actually court a prostitute?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
It just depends on how much of a problem you have with her job.
That's true.
It's literally... Okay, here are the rules, and for those of you buffers out there listening, here are the rules to dating a prostitute.
From experience.
One, you cannot have a jealous bone in your body, because let me tell you something, you're not going to hook up with a prostitute thinking you're going to change her. I'm sorry, you will, and that's what you're thinking when you're getting ready to, but it's not going to happen. A hoe is a hoe, you can't turn a hoe into a housewife. And she's always...
The other way works.
...job. Yeah, you can always turn a housewife into a hoe, but you can never turn a hoe into a housewife. And once they've gone, they never come back. But just for the record, she loves her job. If she didn't love her job, she wouldn't be doing this job. You're not.
This one I know.
This either.
Well, I won't say that that's a generalization, but it's a generalization with credit.
Yes, exactly. Two, she is going to work most nights. Get used to it. Get an Xbox. Three.
Or a computer.
Morning, she's tired. If you're going to hit her up for sex, hit her up right before she goes to work. And these are the rules to dating a prostitute. But by the way, it's going to be the best sex you've ever had. As long as you don't mind thinking about how many you've already been in there before you got there. That day. Anyway.
Well, guys out there, you don't really have to get an Xbox, but you do have to get some sort of game.
You're spending nights alone, I'm telling you. Anyway.
Because have a hobby.
It's a missed money. Okay, so... Oh, no, then you have to talk with Dad.
That may have been after the party, yeah, because my next note is, and Blondie gets creepy Dad.
Oh, yeah. I'm trying
and
to...
Boy, remember. That guy was kind of creepy.
Oh, yeah, look at the picture. Yeah, that was creepy. Where he's telling her, oh, yeah, you're perfect right now. And it's like, what? But it worked for her for some reason.
Yeah.
They got her in the sack. And then you have the since when are you babysitting scene. One where John Leguizamo is getting jealous. Because let's face it, all men who date prostitutes get jealous.
Yeah.
And,
that's where I started hating him. He's married, sleeping with a teenager, and he's jealous?
Okay. I have this theory about this particular part from here on, pretty much, was when I started developing this. But in this movie, John Leguizamo was inadvertently the pimp. He didn't collect the money, but inadvertently, he was the one who set everything in motion.
Yeah.
Yeah, he didn't even think about it when he started paying her $200, $300.
But he was the one who paid her and created her as the prostitute. Then
and she made herself into a pimp.
Yeah.
Oh, and then he got the guys.
Sorry about that, guys. Oh, I finally get a call from her, and I'm recording. Anyway, as I was saying, though, he set up all the dates in the beginning. You know, he did all of this.
Yeah, well, he says, I've got a couple of friends who want babysitters.
Yeah.
And she went and made the appointments, but that was it. So, technically, he was her pimp, and she was the other girl's pimp.
And then, you know, it kind of got a life of its own, so...
Yeah.
He wasn't having to set up the dates anymore.
That is one thing I will tell this director. I mean, kudos for turning sex into an extra character.
Yeah.
I mean, that was actually pretty impressive when you think about it.
Yeah.
Anyway, where were we at?
We're getting to the point where Nadine makes her first attempt to start steal all the clients.
Laptop answers the time question. That's where I noticed the laptop and realized, hey, this isn't in the 70s.
Oh, yeah.
You should have noticed it from the cell phones.
Yeah.
I didn't even... That's how spaced I am. I am exhausted. I'm not going to lie to you guys. Yeah. And I've been sick. So as you can hear, buffers, I have been a little bit ill lately. But, you know, Team of Debauchery, we don't miss a week. Not anymore. But hey, we're here for you guys. So, so that's when I realized this chick is making a freaking mint off of this stable that she's got going.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Now, who wants to give me props for using the term stable?
She's got, what, three other girls, and they're giving her 20%.
No. At one point, she's got six.
Yeah.
That's true. And she's making 20% off of two or $300, depending on which point in the movie you're talking about.
Six girls, $300 a pop. So that's $60 per girl per night.
That they babysit.
Yeah.
And you saw that calendar.
Yeah. I mean, they were booked. And she's only running on five nights a week. Mm-hmm. She's still making mint. Anyway, then you got, I don't know what this is, dinner table. I found it important to put a note about a dinner table in there, and I forgot it.
Is this the one where she's miming cutting herself with a knife?
Oh, right, that's it.
Yeah.
And then that's when...
Or stabbing herself.
That's when they show him the babysitting card.
Yeah. That he hadn't seen yet.
And then she explains to him risk versus reward.
Yeah.
Which was awesome, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Every one of her lines, whether it was the subtle, undercut, sweet, innocent little girl, or the badass pimp bitch, mm-hmm. every one of her lines was so perfectly delivered. I really want to see this actress do more. And it's making me really want to watch Good Dick now.
Good Dick?
It's the other major movie she's played in.
Oh. It's called never heard of it.
It is on Netflix. It's streaming right now.
Oh.
So it's making me kind of want to watch that. And then you have Like This Jacket.
Yeah.
Worst idea in the whole movie. You know, trying to make her sister jealous and then bam. Mm-hmm. And I love the guy. Could I get both of you? It's like, how can you explain two babysitters?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, but that was great. And then you have the competition where she starts stealing clients.
Yep. And the whole ransacking of the school. Yeah,
vandals and all that. That was the greatest idea ever.
Oh, it was a great idea. I think the scene went on a little long, though.
Yeah.
No. I was having a blast during this scene.
Oh, I was, too.
And to me...
It reminded me too much of a montage, though.
It wasn't, though. Had it been a montage, it would have been a lot shorter. It wouldn't have ran on as long as Carl's, was complaining about. But because it was streamlined... And they were just cutting between hallways. It ran on a little long, but at the same time, I'm having a blast because this is what everybody wanted to do back in high school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we just all want to destroy everything, and that's,
I still want to go back to my high school and destroy it. What are you talking about?
Okay, literally, these hormone-ridden, not too intelligent teenage girls and their way too old John are in the middle of high school at night. They broke in. The John is the one saying, well, we need to go for a good reason. And at the same time, these hormones just explode and they tear apart everything. I mean, tell me, even though they were obviously getting sexed up on a regular basis, tell me this isn't an entire metaphor for sexual repression.
For some of those teenagers who don't get sex on a regular basis, I could see them reacting that way.
No. Throughout the majority of America, even teenagers who are getting laid on a regular basis, which, by the way, the reason we suggest teenagers don't have sex is because, well, let's face facts, they're stupid. Thank you, Dr. House. 1-star review from teenagers. But the point I'm trying to make is, in America, the idea is sexual repression, with the exception of certain states. And that's being lifted as we speak. But that's what I'm talking about the metaphor for sexual repression.
Yeah. And by the way, I've looked at it closer and realized that I've actually seen Good Dick.
Have you?
And so has Lisa. Yeah. It's all right. It's not spectacular, but
it couldn't have been too spectacular because I remember nothing about it.
That's the one with the video store clerk who's
I think I've seen part of that.
Yeah, who's going after the girl, the customer.
So Carl and Lisa have both seen Good Dick simultaneously. Anyway, sorry, couldn't help that one. Then you have the company retreat.
Yeah, which I termed overindulgence.
It really was. It was, what is the word I'm looking for? I can't remember the word.
Hey, but I'll just point out, we have the balls to call ourselves a team of debauchery after watching that, though.
True. That is absolutely true. Okay, for one, there's a couple things in this. Most of this party was just an orgy, and okay, cool. But there are a couple things I have to point out throughout this party. One, the Brenda's really special line.
That was just a stupid line.
No, it was creepy as hell to me.
I don't even remember it.
When he's talking to him, he says, Brenda's really special. I always tip her something.
Have you tried any of the other girls?
Oh, yeah.
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 Where he's sitting there talking about how she's so innocent and all that, and that's why he does it. It's like, wow.
And he's watching her like he would, like, and that just reminded me of Stalker much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's from
my most memorable line from this was his "We are the best thing that's ever going to happen to these girls" line.
Yeah, there's that.
That was still a little creepy.
Then because of this guy, they all start rolling. And for those of you who don't know what rolling means, it is a slang term for taking ecstasy. They are just blown. And here's something I want to point you. The chances of having, you know, that many men in a room on X, as dehydrated as they were, because they were sweating like crazy in this room too. And X dehydrates you automatically anyway. So as dehydrated as they must have been, all of those men, or even the amount that you see actually have sex while they're on this stuff, actually being able to get it up are astronomical.
Yeah.
Because one of the side effects, and some people are not affected by this, very, very few, I'm talking like 5% of men in the world, but very few men are not affected by the side effect. But one of the major side effects of X is you can't get it up. You go completely 100% limp. And so that was, I'm watching the scene after they take that X, I'm calling bullshit, like horrid bullshit.
Yeah.
And then it's worse.
I think one of the girls actually addressed that, because she said something like, all these guys think X makes you horny.
All the old people think X make you horny. That was one of quotes that I picked earlier. Or stupid old people think X makes you horny.
Exactly.
But then you see Shirley take her shirt off for the first time in the whole movie. You know, you've seen the wet t-shirt type thing, but you've never seen her take her shirt off. And all I have to say is Shirley has some great tits.
Yeah.
And a tight, sporty body. Moving on from that before I start moving something. I don't like looking at myself.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and there's yet another example of how they actually address the whole X making you limp thing. Because he is having serious problems trying to get it up. In this scene.
That's true.
And then she calls out, Mom! Yeah, right there would have put me limp.
That's when I knew it was over.
Yeah.
Like, for the whole stable, that's when I knew it was over, was when she started calling out Mom. I didn't know, you know, there was one of three ways it could go, but all of them ended in defeat.
Right.
At this point.
Yeah.
My problem was during this scene was he was coming very close to rape. Right
was.
There.
Well, no.
And that's what made me hate him even worse.
At very least, he passed the point of molestation because she was saying no.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
And it was, had he have penetrated, it would have been full-blown rape.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And even worse than that, it would have been rape under the influence, which carries a life penalty.
Which, and then bringing you back to his earlier statement of how she's so sweet and innocent and looking at her thinking stalker. How many stalkers actually turn out to be rapists?
Yeah. Now, here's one problem I have. She freaks out while she's babysitting, right? Like, while she's doing the actual babysitting part. And then she runs out of the house with these little kids left in the house. But nobody addresses this issue. What?
I'm sorry. Nowadays, if that had happened, she would have had the cops called on her. For abandonment, if nothing else.
Yeah. But, oh man, that's just crazy. She left the kids. Then I have family problems written down here. I don't remember what that was for.
That was when she was telling, when Brenda was telling Shirley she was out. She didn't want to babysit anymore.
Right. And, and where she says family problems. Well, obviously. And what I didn't like is where they beat up the brother. Like, I got the point of that, but I didn't believe that these guys would go that far. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
These guys were, I mean, ultimately, they're doing these illegal things, obviously, but ultimately, they were pussies. Like, I could not believe any one of these guys, except maybe John Leguizamo, and that's even a stretch in this character.
And he wasn't even there.
No, he wasn't.
I could identify the two that were.
The asshole was.
The asshole was.
And scary. Then creepy old creepy dad.
I can see Melissa talking. I can see Jerry doing it, and I can see Melissa being able to talk creepy old guy into it.
Maybe.
And it
that would be.
Remember, this was Melissa's play.
That's true.
Yeah, it wasn't Shirley's, which later on the boy blames Shirley for it.
Yeah. He actually says, "I'm trying really hard not to hate you."
Yeah, but he thinks that it was her. He blames her for it happening. He thought she had done it. And everybody thought she had done it. Nobody realized that Melissa was functioning as her enforcer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Even Shirley didn't realize that Melissa was functioning as her enforcer.
Until this point.
Right. Until she sees the boy.
Yeah.
Right.
And then after that, though, you have where Zhang Leguizamo is talking to his little boy for telling his teacher to fuck off.
Yeah.
And I love how
he starts out with a really good idea.
Yeah.
And then it just goes into... And then hilariousness ensues.
Yeah.
Well, at this point, you know, this was supposed to be the big empowering moment in the movie. But at this point, the only thing I can think about this character is, you know, Shirley has control of him. His wife has control of him. Now his, like, 10-year-old son has control of him. This man has no fucking will of his own.
No, not really.
And,
yeah, and most
him,
people,
he never does.
Yeah, most women, most people say that men... That women take their spouse's balls and put them on a shelf somewhere. Well, in this case, everybody who had contact with him took his balls.
Yeah, his best friend has control of him.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has control of this guy through the whole movie, and it never changes.
Oh, yeah.
And that bugged the hell out of me. And especially seeing John Leguizamo after watching him. Like, the last movie I watched him in was Empire.
Mm-hmm.
And... not the last movie that I watched him in as far as actual time that it came out, but the actual last movie I watched that had him in it.
Yeah.
And seeing him go from, like, a character like that, a strong, you know, powerful character, into this was actually a little disheartening.
Yeah.
But he leaves the boy alone, because I actually thought he was going to tell his boss to fuck off. Obviously, that did not happen.
No.
But,
of course not.
No, but he was on the verge of telling his whole family and life to fuck off.
Yeah, he was about to just turn around and
leave. This goes right into the whole scene on the train with Shirley.
Yeah, and I love that. Doesn't this part come later? And I'm not really sure which part she was talking about, but...
The part where they go off somewhere and have sex.
I know, I was making a joke.
That's okay. I just have one question about this whole scene.
Uh-huh.
Who here thinks she picked up the money off the floor of the train car?
Absolutely, she did. Absolutely.
Because it never shows you.
I'm pretty sure.
You see him throw it, but and you just see it, you know, him throw it down, and then the cop shows up,
uh-huh.
And she's hiding. So I'm wondering if, you know, while he was sitting there waiting on her to see if she was going to come out before he left, if she was busy picking up the money.
Who here thinks that the cop actually heard them arguing inside and knew there was someone else in there?
I don't know.
They did get pretty noisy, but I don't know.
Anyway, and then it has probably one of my favorite lines in this whole movie that didn't get done in my buff quotes, just because it was not that spectacular of a line, but I liked it in the context, was, what do you think is going to happen? Because literally, I wish that line would have been done at the beginning of the movie. If you wanted something artsy, that would have been an awesome foreshadowing.
Mm.
Yeah. I do kind of think it was funny, though, that he left her there.
Mm.
Her cell phone in his car.
That was a little different. I was not expecting that. But the worst part about it, and I would get like him pulling out and then coming around a block or something. The weirdest part about it was the cop never leaves first when doing a area check like that.
Oh, yeah.
Because what's to stop somebody from just turning around and going right back in? Cops never leave first in an area check. Anyway, unless they get like a severe
call. How many of us have been pulled over and had a ticket wrote? We're always the one to leave before the cop does.
Well, that's not necessarily
true. Even then.
Oh.
What?
Sorry, I just realized who creepy old dude is.
I knew he looked.
I recognized him, but that was about it.
I didn't really recognize him until I just happened to click on him in IMDb, and the picture in IMDb looked familiar. He's Neelix.
Is he
from
really?
Voyager?
Seriously?
Yeah.
Wow. What character name was that again?
Ethan Phillips is the actor. He played Mark Wessler.
Okay, I gotta look that up. But continue on our roundtable.
Yeah.
We have
her pocketing the cash.
Oh, you did it again.
We have the... Do what?
This is where Nadine goes out on her own again.
Yeah, Nadine going out on her own again.
Because earlier Nadine had called and said she was busy. She could not... she had to study.
Right, and then when she calls and talks to the boy and he says she's babysitting... I gotta say that was an interesting twist.
I did not expect her to go out again. I figured they would have figured it out. You know what I mean?
No. I meant the who she was with was
the dad.
Interesting twist. Yeah, her being with Sally's dad. Or with Shirley's dad.
Yeah, that's...
Earlier, when Nadine hangs up the phone, she tells Brenda she deserves this.
Mm-hmm.
So you're wondering, well, what are they planning that Shirley deserves?
Oh, God, now I'm seeing him in the Neelix actual, like, makeup. Doing
I know.
Doing your perfect right now speech.
I know.
It's disturbing. Anyway, I'm sorry. And then she damn near kills Nadine before she figures out it was the dad.
Yeah, when she almost drops her by accident.
Yeah.
It looked like Nadine's foot came up and knocked her hand loose. Because Nadine was thrashing around pretty hard.
Yeah, basically, it was during the struggle, she lost control.
Yeah, she looked away. She looked back towards the car, and Nadine twisted, and she slipped.
And then, of course, the one guy who has to save the day in this whole fucking movie is the asshole I can't stand.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to be an asshole, at very least stay an asshole through the whole movie. I can't stand it when the asshole redeems himself.
I don't think he really did.
Eh, maybe.
The only part he redeemed himself on was he saved them from going to jail for murder, from dropping somebody off a bridge. Yeah. I mean, he did beat the crap out of her dad.
True.
Yeah.
And if you really, go into it, he basically only saved his own ass.
Because exactly.
If that whole ring went down, then everybody was going down.
Exactly.
So
I really don't think he redeemed himself much. He just happened to be the guy in that. He just happened to be the guy in that position.
Yeah. And then Dad's the John giving this whole message of, you know, reverse what if it was your daughter situation.
Mm-hmm.
And, which I don't know how I feel about, but that ends our round table. Would we like to move into buff quotes? Lisa, you want to go first?
It was always your game. I was just here to play.
Giggity. Carl?
Yeah. And I actually have two.
Okay.
I've got, it's a little silly to regret something that never happened. And then I've got, I would like to order some pussy.
Can you please not say it that way over the phone?
So, anyway, as far as your first one, though, and I don't know how many times I've actually used this line to get women in bed, but it does work, I'm just going to say right now. But I do like it, you know? I hate these people who go on about what could have happened. Well, it didn't, so fuck off. Anyway. Yep. And on to my buff quote. The answer is no. Mom didn't drink. Dad didn't hit me. Uncle Steve never showed me his privates. I don't even have an Uncle Steve. The money is nice. And paid fellatio isn't that much more humiliating than flipping burgers.
I did.
And how
like
many
that.
Of the three of us have all flipped burgers?
Okay, best buffed. Carl, do you want to start us off on this one?
I unfortunately was not able to find anything to give this a best buff for.
Wow. Okay, Lisa?
I've got two.
Okay.
One you guys are both going to disagree with, which is overused narration. Uh-huh. I did not like the before and after the movie narration.
Okay. I disagree
and
also accept it, because it is, it is pushing the limit at points.
Oh, yeah. And then the next one I've got is probably not going to ever be used again, but I'm going to have to call it the Shirley's tits shot. It was...
Okay.
Best set of tits in a movie?
So far,
yes.
At least.
All right, so we now have the Babysitter's Bare Tits Award.
You know what's funny is I was actually going to give her an award, and y'all are going to probably be a little upset with both of these, but let's face facts. This movie fit them. And I can't believe I'm actually switching this award over so soon after creating it, but I'm giving Shirley the Eliza Dushku Bikini Body Award, because not just her tits, but her whole body was freaking banging.
What?
You know what
I mean? Can't actually argue with that.
The only problem I have with Shirley is I don't like her face.
I agree, but her
body...
Put a
bag over it.
But her body... Oof. Anyway, and I'm
bag
also...
Bag over her face and deal with the rest of it.
And for the record, that's not nothing against the actress. That is the character.
Uh-huh.
Because the way they had her done up, her face was intentionally supposed to look kind of meh.
Kind of off, yeah. And for the record, the first time we've ever done this, because it's the first one that's ever fit, but this is going to be a highly coveted award. And I am so happy to finally get this one out. I created this when we created this show, and I've just never given it to anybody. But I am giving this the Movies in the Buff Debauchery Award.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to have to go with that one. Yeah.
And because this was the greatest, I guess the word would be allocation. Yeah, allocation of debauchery in a movie ever.
Yeah, yeah, this thing went into full-on bacchanalia status.
Yeah, it really did. Beyond that, I really struggled with the name of this because I was going to either call it what I did, the Movies in the Buff Debauchery Award, or I was going to call it the, I forgot their names again.
Oh, well.
Anyway, the Richard Bitzel, who did Dance of a Lifetime.
Frank Downey.
Frank Downey. I was going to call it the Richard Bissell Frank Downey Debauchery Award.
Nah.
But I like
Movies in the Buff Debauchery Award, yeah.
Okay, so moving into where you're playing with your Willy, Carl, would you like to start us off?
All right. Let's see. No,
I'm just playing with my Willy in this one.
Why does Jerry say he wants to open up another restaurant down the river?
To keep the camel jockeys from coming up to where they're at.
Yep.
I couldn't remember what he called them. It took me a minute.
And in the health class, when she's showing the STD shot, she says one of them is an up-close shot. Which STD is that?
Gonorrhea.
Herpes.
Gonorrhea.
Oops. Okay.
Oh, I can't believe those were the two scenes that I was actually paying attention to. Lisa, would you like to ask?
Just to make you mad.
Oh no.
What side was the name tag on in the last Shirley shot?
Left. It's on her left breast.
I'm gonna go with that. Actually, I'll go with right just because that way I'm opposite of Carl.
It's on the left.
I figured.
Yeah. What town did he meet his wife in?
Oh damn, I don't remember.
I don't either. Actually, started with a C.
No, it didn't.
I do not remember.
I'm
Ann Arbor.
Ann Arbor.
Oh, yeah.
Fair enough. So it's 2-1 right now.
Yep.
And I'm going into asking, so we'll see how this works out. Okay. According to the science teacher, when dissecting a fetal pig, why should you take particular care?
Not to cut the pudendum.
Lisa?
He said why?
Oh,
He was in the right context.
Yeah, it's a messy thing or something like that. I don't remember exactly what he says.
Lisa?
Nobody wants to deal with a messy, a cut, that word Carl used.
I know. Y'all were both close, but you used the wrong body part. Not to perforate the duodenum.
Duodenum.
Okay, so. When he catches her... Oh, wait, that's the wrong one. Okay, what picture is on the wall? And I put John. I can't remember his name. John Leguizamo's character.
What picture is on the wall where?
In his kitchen.
Which scene?
In his kitchen.
I don't know. I wasn't paying attention to the wall.
And I need
to I don't remember there being a picture on the wall in his kitchen.
There was.
I don't remember.
Okay, neither of you?
No.
Okay, it's a rooster with the words Le Coq written on it.
Oh, God.
Wow.
When I noticed it, it cracked me up so much, because I was actually looking for questions. Yeah. And I saw that, and I was like, I don't care if they get it or not, I gotta throw this in there.
Yeah.
We didn't.
That hurt. Anyway.
You won.
Wow. Yep.
2-1.
We have our most debaucherous movie ever, and I'm the one who wasn't playing with his Willy.
Uh-huh.
That makes no goddamn sense whatsoever. I said it again.
The one who complains he needs it the most.
Yeah. What can I say, Rod? Lisa spent half the movie pretending she was a babysitter.
Anyway. I actually, at that moment, had a flashback to your World of Warcraft scene where y'all both took Noggin Fogger and turned it
I remember that.
Anyway, now I'm seeing skeletons giving each other blowjobs, and it's a whole different thing. Okay, so audience questions. Wow, I won. I get to start off. So, when he catches Charlie, quote, playing, unquote, with his friend at the retreat, what was displayed in pink neon on the wall? Be specific. And
I'm so Lisa, glad I don't have to answer that question.
Lisa?
On Shirley's closet door, there were some sticky notes. How many of them were there?
Excellent. And Carl?
What color is Shirley's shirt in the last scene of this movie?
Well, we have some really difficult audience questions. Remember, you can email any or all of those answers in to inthebufffilms@gmail.com. Answering any or all will get you recognition on the air, and provided the correct recording equipment, a microphone and Skype, will get a call in show so that you can give shout-outs, give your opinion on a movie that we're buffing, or just, in general, say naughty comments to the rest of us. Mental debuff time. Carl?
I got a couple of things I'm going to say to this, and one of them is from one of the posts on the IMDb forums, which I actually looked at a little while ago. And what this needs, this is a pretty good story. They needed a better director. It needed, you know, somebody who wasn't the person who wrote it to direct it. And could have been vastly improved. And yeah, I'm going to agree with the guy who posted in the IMDb forums that this thing needs a TV show spinoff on the CW right after Gossip Girl.
Nice. I like that. I do. I like that. Okay, Lisa, mental debuff time.
When I was younger, I did babysitting, and I don't remember babysitting being anything like that.
Oh. Do yourself a favor. Go to PornMD and type in babysitting.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. I can do a better job. I'll just pretend I'm the babysitter, and Carl has been a bad boy, so he needs to go to my room. And that's my mental debuff.
Just for the record, that quiet part, I'm going to get some crickets to throw in there. But awesome. Awesome. Okay. What time is it?
It's time for Rod's Rants.
It's time for Rod's Rants. All right. This movie is ample. It's supple. It's new. Is everything okay over there?
Yeah.
Okay. Waiting. Okay. Let's see. How else can I compare this movie to Bress? John Leguizamo played a very strange character for him, and it showed. But at least he did it well. The acting was good. The story was... Damn. Anyways, this was a wonderful idea for a movie if they hired a decent costume department and a better DOP. Once again, for those of you who don't know, DOP is director of photography. Try to keep up, people. This movie would have killed. However, the average shots in this film were as dark as the holes the girls were getting stuck in. Also, due to the costume and the set design, I had no idea this movie wasn't set back in the 70s till I saw a damned laptop. Either way, I believe this was an idea brought about by reading Richard Bissell. And there's that name again. And when you go and you watch this movie, make sure you have someone you love or someone you fuck or some 16-year-old you hired to babysit, because honestly, you're going to do her to death at the end of this movie. And that's Rod's Rants, ladies and gentlemen. Yes! I got masturbatory noises.
No, that was applause.
Oh, was it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, we see where my mind's at. Awesome. Awesome. Actually, that rant would have been a whole lot better if I didn't feel like I was going to cough this whole time. Yeah. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, I do apologize. I am ill. But I am making it through for you people. And that would be the end of our episode. So join us next week. We'll be buffing Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, my actual all-time favorite movie. So, we have Jim Carrey, we have that fat chick from Titanic, And we have weird hair colors with Elijah Wood. So what else is there? You know, you don't need anything else in a movie, do you? Oh, and
a good director.
And you have a stoned Kirsten Dunst. So, I mean, what's better than a stoned Kirsten Dunst?
That depends. Once again, have a good director.
Once again, I'm throwing in here cricket noises. But join us next week, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. And until then, keep watching those movies in the buff, because as you know, it's just better that way. Good night, folks.
Of course.
Good night.
Good night.
Hello, buffers. It's your favorite host. I'm taking a second to let you know you can find us on Facebook and Google+, and have some absolutely naughty conversations with your other buffers. And as always, if you need to talk or flirt with our team of debauchery, you can email us at inthebufffilms@gmail.com. That's 3 F's. Trust me, we love to talk to our fans, especially the good-looking ones. Movies in the Buff was recorded with Creative Commons, Attribution Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 3.0 U.S. License.